And welcome now to the Midday for a Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland. Beethoven is in the air. There will be an all-Beethoven concert tomorrow night, 7:30, Capitol Theater, put on by the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra with the King Stephen Overture. That's some lively Hungarian stuff. The Beethoven Fifth. And the centerpiece of the concert, the Piano Concerto No. 3 in C minor, as played by John O'Connor, who is back in our studio. Welcome back to the Midday.
Thank you, Norman. It's good to be back.
You've been traveling around between mostly between Virginia and Toronto, and not surprisingly, just to keep up the accent, a trip to Dublin is in the works.
That's right, yes. Traveling far too much and at the mercy of flights and airports and weather a lot.
And you've long since, though, figured out how to adapt for all that travel?
Yes, indeed. It's not so bad when it's within the States or Canada and that sort of thing. And even across to Ireland, it's like hopping across the pond to Ireland. But once you get going regularly to the Far East and Australia, New Zealand, it gets a little bit more difficult.
You have a rather charming teaching video online, I notice, for very, very beginning piano students.
That's right. I mean, they did that. They asked me to do that in Shenandoah University, where I teach in Virginia, a few years ago. And they said, what do you have as sort of little hints and that sort of thing? And I told them a few things and they said, okay, let's video that and put it up. And it's amazing the reaction from people. They said, I never thought of it that way. And why should we do it that way? And, you know, and that makes things easier. So that's good.
The little forest and the big forest.
Yes, exactly. It's good.
You find the D.
In the middle of the little forest.
In the little forest, and then you find in the big forest, you'd have a G and an A in there.
That's right, in the middle, yes.
And on it goes. Yeah. Well, you know, there's, I think, nothing more important in teaching than having the right kind of tone for the lesson.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very important at the beginning to get the touch right for kids, and that's why I say it's always, if you want your kids to learn the piano, it's very good to ask around about good piano teachers. Because, I mean, when I was in high school in Dublin, and all the guys, it was an all-boys school, and they couldn't believe I was still taking piano lessons. They all seemed to have, as piano teachers, harridans who used to hit them across the knuckles with a pencil if they played a wrong note. And if anybody had done that to me, I would have given up. I mean, it was just terrible. They seemed to be, I don't know, elderly ladies who were frustrated. I mean, I know lots of wonderful teachers who are elderly ladies who are fabulous. And I mean, there are some who, the one I can think of who's in, I think, 102 in Curtis now, who's still teaching and inspiring people. But at the same time, I've known 40-year-olds, men and women, who should have been told at the age of 18, go and do something else. Don't become a musician. You know, keep your love of music and make your money elsewhere.
Well, yeah, that's so often true.
Yeah.
Well, as an Irish pianist, you must have taken particular pride in, I won't say discovering, but rediscovering for all of us, although these almost 30 years ago now, those nocturnes by John Field, who invented the piano nocturne, Irish composer.
Yes, I mean, something that I think many kids are taught, I mean, certainly in Russia as well as in Ireland, and in many other places, they're taught nocturnes just to really teach them how to, kids 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, just how to produce a beautiful tone in the right hand and to balance that against a soft accompaniment. And these are perfect pieces for them. But it's, people used to actually look down their noses at their Field nocturnes and say, you know, they're second-rate Chopin. But in fact, when you realize that, you know, compared to the Chopin nocturnes, I mean, they're written 40 years ahead or 30 years ahead, and they were so far ahead of it. I mean, it's about the same distance between early Haydn sonatas and late Beethoven sonatas. And, you know, it's the same years. And this, nobody would say Haydn sonatas are not good because the Beethoven sonatas are much better. It's a different genre. And I think Field nocturnes are the same. And I think they deserve their place in history and should be cherished.
And they're rather charming above all, I would say. And,
that too,
and
yes.
Here's the first. John O'Connor, the pianist.
Thank you.
delicacy of a music box.
It's beautiful music. It really is. Haven't heard it for ages.
Well, you recorded it back some time prior to 1990.
I know, yes. About 1989, I think it was.
John O'Connor with the first of the total of 15 piano nocturnes, the Nocturne in E-flat by the Irish composer, contemporary of Beethoven, John Field. There's, well, of course, every time we come around to March 17th, there's this little scramble to come up with, you know, music by Irish composers.
Yeah.
And, of course, John Field is always in there. But it makes me wonder, in terms of keyboard music, who else would be out there that you might record if you haven't?
There's not all that much. I mean, the problem is that sponsorship of the arts in Ireland was very good in the 19th century because, or in the 18th century. But then in 1800, there was the big Act of Union where the Brits who were running Ireland at the time took back the Irish Parliament and closed it down and said everybody has to go back to London. So a lot of the people who would have sort of sponsored the arts or favoured the arts went back to London, and so they're... We were left with not much money and not many people, you know, who appreciated them, and it was very, very difficult. It really was. I mean, when you think in the 18th century, things were happening. Like Giminiani lived in Dublin.
Yeah.
John Field was there. Handel's Messiah was premiered in Dublin.
Yeah.
You know, things like that were happening, but in the 1800s, very little. I mean, there was a huge collapse, really. And at that stage, I suppose, Irish traditional music and Irish traditional arts took over, and that was good because it led to, finally, 100 years later, our getting independence.
Have you ever thought of transcribing and recording songs, Tula O'Carolan, some of his harp music, or some of the Irish folk tunes?
I've actually done a recording on which a friend of mine encouraged me to do. She's a very prominent sort of supporter of the arts in New York, and she's half Irish. And so she sponsored a recording I did with the Irish Chamber Orchestra of Irish Airs, and it's called Irish. It's been issued in various names, Irish Classics. And I've done lots of hornpipes and reels and Danny Boy and
well, sure.
Take Me Home Again, Kathleen, and Irish Airs in really, actually very beautiful arrangements for piano and chamber orchestra. If you don't have one, I will send you one.
You
have it for next Patrick's Day. It's available somewhere on Amazon.com. I think it's available somewhere, but certainly I'll send you one.
Well, it'd be wonderful.
Yes.
Haven't seen that and certainly haven't heard it, and we'd be delighted to share it.
Yeah, and it's really, and it's beautifully recorded too, you know.
We won't even wait till March 17th. How's
okay.
That? I mean, why wait? You
know, exactly.
It doesn't have to be just one day a year. You've recorded a fair amount of Schubert in one form or another over the years. And this is goes back just as far, actually, if not farther than what we just heard, which is to say the Trout Quintet of Schubert, which has a wonderful piano part.
Very it's fantastic.
Sparkling, energetic.
Yeah. One of my favorite pieces. And, of course, to record it with the Cleveland Quartet was a dream. And they were wonderful to work with. So we had a marvelous experience playing a few concerts before we did the recording. And we just clicked very well.
Such a great combination with the strings having the double bass added at the one end and
yes.
The piano to carry up the other.
Indeed.
Here's the presto from it. This is John O'Connor with the Cleveland Quartet, and the double bassist is James Vandermark. For the pianist not to get a little bit involved hearing that.
Indeed. Didn't know I played it that fast.
Well, it does say presto.
It was, yeah.
The third movement, Scherzo, third of the five movements of the Trout Quintet by Franz Schubert with the Cleveland Quartet, anchored by double bassist James Vandermark and the pianist, my guest today, John O'Connor, who is in Wisconsin, in Madison specifically, to perform with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra tomorrow night, Friday night, 7:30, the Capitol Theater. The program with the King Stephen Overture, the Beethoven Fifth, and in the middle, the Piano Concerto No. 3 in C minor by Beethoven. And quite a variety of things that you have going on, though. It's not all Beethoven for you.
No, I mean, sort of lots of different things. I also run the Dublin International Piano Competition, which starts next week. So we had 214 entries from around the world. I've been running it for 30 years now. It's every 3 years. And we have an international jury and big prizes. We pay for a New York debut and a London debut in the Wigmore Hall and in Carnegie Hall and that sort of thing. So it's big prizes. We had a huge entry, very high standard. So a marvelous jury coming. Everybody wants to come on the jury. They have a good time in Dublin as well as everything else.
How could they not?
We give them good parties as well. So everybody's happy. But it'll be very exciting. And it's a feast of piano playing. It really is. And quite a few friends of mine from the States are flying over just for the final because they've come over once or twice before and loved it.
And you've been doing this for how long, did you say?
We started 1988 with the first competition.
So 30 years.
It's the 11th competition this year.
You seeing any difference in the pianists over the years?
Standard has gone up enormously.
How could it go up much higher?
I know, but it's. I mean, the thing is that it almost, you know, there's. Its perfection is taken for granted nowadays.
I
mean, you know, 50 years ago, people expected everybody to play lots of wrong notes, and they don't anymore, really. Whether, in fact, they're saying anything better with it is something that's special. I mean, we invite jury members who are not just counting wrong notes, as some jury members do.
Do they?
But somebody who actually says, that touches me, that means something to me. And that makes a big difference. I mean, I keep saying to young pianists, it's not what you play, it's how you play it. And it's what you have to say about it that we listen for. Everybody has 5 minutes to actually attract the jury to say, I have something special to say. And okay, if they play lots of wrong notes, they don't get passed. But if you engage the jury, then they want to hear more. And then means an audience wants to come near you.
Beethoven was among those who said, you know, that hitting the right note was not as important as
the feeling. Lots of other people. I mean, one of my favorite recordings of the Brahms First Concerto is Schnabel, which has lots of wrong notes in it, and yet fantastic playing. Just, I mean, such moving playing.
Yeah, and I was reading about Vladimir Horowitz and his final concert where he played a fair number of wrong notes for one reason or another, but the crowd, you know, would not let him leave.
No.
You know, they loved it so
much. Magic. Absolute magic, yes.
Oh, I can't resist going back to John Field again because this is one of those little pieces that just sparkles, and Hamilton Hardy picked it up and made it part of his John Field suite.
That's right.
For orchestra.
That's right.
And this is the second part of the piano sonata in E flat by John Field. And this takes us back a mere 27 years or so in your recording.
When I was five.
Exactly. Four and a half.
Maybe.
Here it is. lovely stuff. I don't know. Is that? It's not exactly a jig, but what is that?
Well, it is sort of a jig. Yes,
is it?
It'll pass as a jig.
Well, I'd like to see it done sometime that way. Lovely stuff. The second movement, I guess you would say.
Second movement, yeah.
Of the piano sonata in E-flat, Opus 1, number 1, mm-hmm. by the Irish composer and pianist John Field, who actually went to Russia for, I think, pretty much his whole...
He went to Russia in his early 20s and stayed there until he died in 1837.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the Russians seem to have liked him, and the feeling seems to have been fairly mutual since he stayed there so long.
They adored him.
And now back one more to John O'Connor. And as I mentioned, he's playing the Beethoven Third Piano Concerto tomorrow night with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. And you did record that not terribly long, maybe 10, 12 years ago?
Yeah, it was.
With the London Symphony.
Noughties, or whatever they call them now.
They call them what?
The Noughties, as against the teens and the 90s.
The
they call it the Noughties. 2006 or 7.
I like that.
Something like that.
I like that.
Yeah.
And so what can you tell us about the third movement of it?
Oh, it's. I think it's a fantastic movement. I mean, I adore this concerto. I mean, one of the stories about the C minor concerto is that Beethoven heard Mozart's C minor concerto, and he was walking along the road with a friend, and he said, "Who could ever write anything that good?" And then he wrote his own third concerto in C minor, you know. And the last movement has such incredible energy; it has fantastic, and yet at the end it changes into C major, as though sort of everything has a happy ending. It's like a Mozart opera.
There you go. And this is John O'Connor with the London Symphony, Andreas Delfs, conducting the finale of Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 3 in C minor. Wasn't that fun? That, you know, from the ending of that, you wouldn't believe it was a minor key concerto, would you?
Oh, yes. I think he likes shocking people from time to time.
So big and boisterous and outgoing. That's the finale of Beethoven's Piano Concerto No. 3 in C minor, featuring my guest, John O'Connor, with the London Symphony, Andreas Delfs, conducting back about 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And that's part of a set of all, one, three, and four of
That's
the
right.
Beethoven Piano Concerto.
We recorded them on two CDs. The other one has two and five.
And so the complete set. And John O'Connor is my guest for the midday today. He'll be performing with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra tomorrow night, 7:30 Capitol Theater, and all Beethoven program, in which he'll be playing that Piano Concerto No. 3. And see, any now having heard that after 10 years or so, John, thinking, oh, I should play it this way or that way tomorrow night?
No, I'm going to play it the way I play it now. Uh-huh. Every time it's different. And that's the wonderful thing. I mean, I remember once doing a tour in Russia, and I had an interpreter traveling. It was in the Soviet era, so she was probably reporting to the KGB every day. But however, I did 13 recitals, and I think I had to do the same program everywhere. So I played the Waldstein Sonata of Beethoven, and after the 13th, she came and she said, "You played it different every time. Did you set out to play it differently?" And I said, "No, it's just, it's that day. It's that's how I feel. Yeah. It's that hall. It's that piano. This is the way I feel it should go today."
I'm guessing that Beethoven never played it the same way twice either, even if he could have, which would be virtually impossible, I think, given the circumstances change.
Yes,
from one performance to the next.
Absolutely.
I doubt if he would want to. Plus, we all, I think, have this tendency toward changing things, doing it a little differently the next time.
Well, you don't necessarily set out to do it differently. It's just you feel that way on that particular day and you think, this audience, this piano, this orchestra, this conductor, let's do it this way. And Andrew's such a wonderful conductor. I mean, the rapport with him is terrific. So, I mean, it's like playing chamber music with an old friend. That's really great.
Andrew Sewell, conductor of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. And now back to John O'Connor, my guest for today, for the midday. And performing, as I've mentioned, tomorrow night. Other performances upcoming or a...
Yes, on Saturday night I'm doing a piano recital also in Madison for the Farley's House of Piano series. And so I'm looking forward to that too. I've never played on that series before, so I'm looking forward to the first time. And I'm playing some John Field Nocturnes.
I wondered about that.
And a Beethoven sonata and a Haydn sonata. I've just started recording quite a few Haydn sonatas for the Steinway label. I did 5 last year, and I'm doing 2 more recordings later this year.
Now, I think earlier we were comparing Beethoven and Haydn as piano sonata composers. There are many Beethoven sonatas that have captured the imagination of performers and audiences over the years. Not so with Haydn. I doubt if many audience members at all could name one Haydn piano sonata that they remember.
Yeah, it's terrible.
What's the difference?
I think they're wonderful. I mean, I think the Haydn sonatas are absolutely, they have such effervescence, they have such liveliness. The last movements, many of the prestos are so funny and so full of life. I mean, he wasn't called Papa Haydn for no reason. He was such a genial guy. And
had quite a sense of humor.
Had a great sense of humor. But even the C minor sonata, which I absolutely adore, is one of the deepest sonatas. And I really adore this piece. And when I give it to students, they really fall in love with it. And they play it so marvelously. And the B minor sonata I'm playing on Saturday night at the recital, I think, is one of my favorites. I mean, it's from his Sturm und Drang period, Storm and Stress.
Sure.
And it's full of vigor and strength, with a beautiful minuet second movement and a last movement that goes like the hammers of hell. So it goes so fast.
Yeah. So you're saying you're going to be recording those?
I've recorded the B minor sonata already for Steinway, mm-hmm. but I'm doing 2 more recordings in December in New York for Steinway. I have to decide which 10 sonatas to choose. And I mean, he wrote 52.
Yeah, there are a lot.
I mean, well, 62 if you count the ones that are not finished. They can't find the rest of them. But of the 52, I mean, I did 6 on the last one. So I have to find another 12 or 10 or 12. I know some of them I definitely have to do. Mm-hmm. But the others, you know, it's difficult what to leave out.
It's a good problem to have.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Well, we also were comparing John Field and Frédéric Chopin, who came along a generation later, in terms of about a generation, with the nocturnes. In the Field, we said, developed the piano nocturne, invented it.
Yes.
Chopin did something else with it. How would you describe the difference?
Well, I try and describe it as like the difference between a Bellini aria and a Puccini aria. And a Bellini aria can be so incredibly beautiful with a glorious vocal line and a very simple accompaniment. And they would be the Field nocturnes, whereas a Puccini aria is glorious vocal lines, much more complex harmonies and that sort of thing. And Chopin was the same. I mean, the harmonies are much more complex, and he does, develop it in certain ways, goes in extraordinary directions, and some of his later nocturnes are so dramatic, incredibly dramatic, quite away from the gentle sort of nocturnes of Field. But Field have their own charm. But I mean, when you have realized that Chopin published, Field published his first nocturnes when Chopin was only 4.
Yes.
And so it's a big difference between the two.
Right around
1814,
I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is one of those Chopin nocturnes that you recorded back in the 90s. Nocturne in C-sharp minor, opus 27, number 1.
Thank you.
It just kind of fades into the ether, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's such a beautiful nocturne.
That Chopin nocturne. And do you ever improvise on the piano?
No, I'm no good at it. I play with the notes, but my sister was great at parties. I'm terrible at parties. My piano teacher at one stage found me trying to do it because there was a guy in my school who could do it. He could hear a melody and put an accompaniment to it, and I couldn't. And I tried to do it one time. My teacher came in and sort of said, "Don't you dare do that. It's very bad for you." Which it's not.
It's bad for you. I'm not sure about that.
Anyway, I never did it. I was very obedient in those days.
In those days. Well, I'm glad you've... matured.
Yeah, yes. Eventually.
Here's one more from that same Telarc CD that features these autumn songs, it's called, Popular Works for Solo Piano, and this is Le Coucou by Louis-Claude Daquin.
Yes.
And originally, of course, a harpsichord piece, but
that's right.
Fun for a pianist?
It works very well on the piano. It's great fun.
Some of those compositions written for harpsichord work better on the piano than others. Some of them, like that one, just have this almost timeless charm to them, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think I heard it first when I was about 14, and I just thought, oh, that's cute. That's really, I mean, the idea of the cuckoo and the sounds, and I love sounds on the piano. I mean, it's like the Grieg Nocturne, which I played a lot when I was at 10, 11, 12, that sort of thing, which has bird songs in it and the trees rustling in the middle. And it's so imaginative.
Well, it's been great having the imaginative pianist John O'Connor with us for the midday today. Again, I should say, it's your second visit.
Yes, indeed. Nice to be back. Thank you.
2 or 3 years, yeah. Performing with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra tomorrow night, the Beethoven Third Piano Concerto. And that's 7:30 at the Capitol Theater, and then performing Saturday night at Farley's House of Pianos.
That's right.
In Madison, another completely different program. So, look forward to your next visit.
Thank you. I look forward to it, too.